Okay, so my name's Claire and I study early modern Italian festivals and rituals, particularly Venice and Florence in the 16th century. And I'm interested in festivals as a form of communication and also festivals within community formation. I'm interested particularly in kind of civic festivals and also the role more of the people rather than the nobility. And so we're going to talk about, Colin and I, we're going to talk about festivals in the 16th century and also in the 20th century.
Yes, my name is Colin. I am a first year PhD student researching music and musicians in both America and Britain. And during the 60s in particular, there were obviously a lot of festivals that happened and occurred. So we're kind of doing a comparison between festivals then and festivals now for the Now and Then podcasts for the Early Modern Forum.
Okay, so something I'm particularly interested in, I suppose, is how festivals were organised, and then how the festival as this kind of idea became available to like a much broader range of people through the interaction with print in the 16th century. And the main source that I'm using for my dissertation is a printed collection of festival books. And the festival books are a really kind of broad range of texts, everything from kind of 100-page elaborately illustrated accounts intended to be circulated in kind of foreign courts, so very much a kind of official, almost kind of elite form. And then also within this kind of range of the festival books, you've got the kind of few-page pamphlets of verses that would have been sold on the piazza at the time of the festival. So what I'm trying to get at really is how in the 16th century, through print mainly, the festival could be experienced kind of indirectly by a broader range of people. And I guess there's some similarities there.
There are some very close similarities. Obviously there's these posters advertising an event happening and handbills for saying who's going to be on when. But you've also got print in general. There have been many books written about it afterwards, but print media was a very important aspect for organizing and disseminating information for these festivals.
That's interesting. And I suppose as well, as you say, with books being printed afterwards and stuff, it's also a large part of the kind of memory of the festival after the event. In terms of like, because the festival itself is quite an ephemeral kind of the moment thing. So obviously the way that they were kind of memorialised in other forms of media, particularly in my case kind of print and manuscript, I suppose for you it's going to be a much broader range.
Very much a broader range for me. The festivals we're talking about today are the Monterey International Pop Festival and Woodstock, the two big ones in the US, and those have both been recorded at the time. So all the music has been recorded in various forms, from vinyl to CDs to to internet downloads nowadays. But you've also got, there were radio clips advertising it. You played a little bit of a track from an artist saying, they're going to be at the Monterey Pop Festival or Woodstock or something. And it was just a big montage of all the people. And also with Woodstock in particular, you've got the movie versions of it. I think a couple years ago was the 40th anniversary of Woodstock. So they did a big 40th anniversary director's cut. I think it was 6 DVDs for the whole, it was a 3-day event. So everyone who performed, who was recorded, interviews with people, cast members. So there was a big.
So the kind of commercial element of it kind of lives on well beyond the day itself.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah. And I'd say it's quite similar, really, with the festivals of Venice and Florence, in that often the festival books themselves were these quite official productions, and because of the kind of stylistic conventions of that genre, and because of the kind of noble audience a lot of them were being produced for, they wouldn't mention the commercial elements of the festival at the time. But, you know, we know from other sources that the piazza would be packed with people, packed with kind of itinerant sellers and singers kind of selling cheap pamphlets and kind of cheap mementos of the event. And again, that's a way that, you know, you take something like that home and it makes that event kind of more permanent and aids in the memory of that event. And also it's kind of a part of the broader project of kind of advertising the city. You know, you've got a lot of tourists, even in the 16th century, you know, people coming in from other places for festivals. And I guess it's kind of similar.
Similar indeed. Monterey was actually a free festival. So at the time, it wasn't intended to be commercial. Obviously, it has since become commercialized, and I don't know how they made money off of it, but I'm sure the organizers did somehow. And Woodstock was intended to be commercial when it started, but the demand was so heavy for it afterwards that 500,000 people were there and kind of gate crashed, so it kind of became a free event. But memories of it, they've got little buttons, the peace symbols, the three-pronged peace symbols were a very prominent event at Woodstock to remember that. And memory dissemination-wise has... the kind of the catchphrase nowadays was, you were at Woodstock or you weren't. Kind of, you weren't part of the culture if you weren't at Woodstock.
Yeah. It's interesting because, you know, I'm looking at the 16th century where... you know, the movement of this kind of representation of festivals into print was quite a significant one, and it was quite a major part in an effort to make these events more permanent. And even in the 20th century, when all of these other forms of media are kind of readily available, there's still people buying little pins, and, you know, still it's still an element of it. And a key way, I suppose, people remember, and, you know, they want to remember these events.
Yes, but I guess we should talk about who was attending these events. Who was the audience for it? For me, the audience was basically anyone who liked music. There was a hippie audience for the majority of them, the long-haired, unclean, drug-using people are the stereotypical people who attended. But of all these, of all the kind of festival events, Monterey was international. It had a Ravi Shankar, who was an Indian musician, come and just trying to get a wide variety of people to see a wide variety of music.
Yeah.
It had also had Otis Redding, who was a black musician. Monterey took place a little bit south of San Francisco in the city of Monterey, mostly middle-class white kids who were mostly hippies. Who had never been introduced to any of this style of music before. So it was designed to be diverse for as many people as possible.
Yeah, that's interesting. I suppose it's quite difficult to, as with many things, 16th century Venetian and Florentine, it can be quite difficult to actually get at the audience for these events. I mean, if you look at the festival books I'm looking at, they'll go into massive detail about all the kind of dignitaries who attended. You know, very often it will name them, it will say where they came from, it will describe their entry into the city. It quite often talks about what they were wearing, and, you know, how they were wearing kind of crimson velvet robes and, you know, elaborate jewellery and things like this. And yet, you know, the kind of popular element that we know must have been there is kind of, it's only ever really alluded to, if that. You know, you kind of maybe get in a book of 20 pages, you might get a sentence that says, and the piazza was full of, you know, happy people shouting San Marco, San Marco, or something like that. And yet, you know, it's interesting because, again, I suppose it is part of the convention of that book that it was produced for a noble audience. But it's interesting as well because obviously Venice and Florence, well, Florence more intermittently, but they were republics, you know, they were built on this kind of popular participation element. And this really isn't something that's reflected in the festival books. And yet from other primary sources, you know, from the accounts of Sanudo, the Venetian diarist, or, you know, travellers like Fiennes Morrison or someone like that, you know, they talk, you know, at one point Sanudo talks about how he estimates 100,000 people were in the city of Venice for this festival, and obviously that's probably a bit of an exaggeration. But, you know, they weren't all noble patricians, and this is something you have to really try and, you know, have to be a bit of a sort of detective, I suppose, and try and read between the lines of the sources to get at the audience. But, you know, we know that, for instance, a lot of shops were ordered to be closed on feast days and festival days, and, you know, workers would be stopped from working. So they must have been in and about the city in the public areas. And also we know that, you know, these kind of itinerant sellers were in the piazza selling their cheap prints and small mementos and stuff, and they must have been selling to someone.
Especially if there's 100,000 people. Yeah. I can't imagine there's 100,000 nobles anywhere near Florence and Venice combined, probably. So.
Well, yeah.
So, and if they're designed to be popular and represent the city, wouldn't want the people in the city to be represented by the people in the city.